You're listening to Donuts and Top Cow.
Two great tastes that taste better together.
Thank you for listening. I'm one of your co-hosts, John Grigas.
And I'm Josh Crawley.
And we'd like to welcome you once again to the episode 6, and this one's going to be a fun one. The main theme of it is why Top Cow?
Or why not Top Cow?
And that's what we're going to discuss. First, we want to thank Westfield Comics, our sponsor, for the space and the support and everything that they do. Westfield Comics can be found online at www.westfieldcomics.com to do pre-orders and subscription service, as well as recent back issues. Another thing that westfieldcomics.com brings is of the LCS experience, Josh. If you live here in Madison like I do, you get a chance to come in and you can chat a bit with Josh and find out what he's looking at in previews these days. You can go to the West Side store and you can hear from Bob about what's new in the world of cartoons or what is kind of coming around the corner. You can chat with Wayne. And if you don't live in Madison and if you don't have a local comic shop near you, you may not get that sense of community. But if you go to westfieldcomics.com, it's not just a pre-order site. There's a very active blog page where you can get posts from Josh and Bob and Wayne regularly, and it's the same kind of experience. You just have to do it in your comfort of your own home.
And we do reply to comments, or at least I try to. I'm not always great about that. But you can comment, and I look at them sometimes.
So come for the discounts and stick around for some of the community. Donuts this week, Josh. This week we've got Lane's Bakery in
Madison.
I've
heard good things.
Good things about that. And today we've got some apple fritters from Lane's.
Ooh, the apple fritter test.
So we'll see.
Be interesting.
We'll see how it passes. I haven't had one yet, but I'm about to.
And all right.
We'll see how that goes. And we do have an active contest open for February.
Yes, we do. We are giving away a... Is it Witchblade 139 or is it 138? Well, it's one or the other. It's the one that had guest artist Michael Gatos. Kind of deals with some of the... I don't want to say repercussions. I suppose it's sort of emotional repercussions of... Sarah's sister Julie getting shot in Artifacts Number 1. And that's signed by awesome author Ron Mars. And I'd like to thank Ron and Adam Freeman and Top Cow for hooking us up with that. You can visit Top Cow at topcow.com or Ron Mars even at ronmars.com. R-O-N-M-A-R-Z.com.
Both worthwhile trips. And to enter the contest, just send us an email to dtcpodcast@gmail.com. Once again, we'll mention it, I'm sure, at the end of the show, too. We're hungry for feedback, but we're mostly hungry to give away some great signed stuff.
Yeah, and extra bonus question, if you can tell us what the P.S. in Jimmy P.S. Hayes' name stands for, we might throw in some cool bonus stuff if you win.
So don't delay. Vote early and often.
All righty. Why Top Cow?
And that is a good question and something that I've wanted to kick off and talk about on this show really since we first started talking about doing a show. It's probably encapsulated by a recent email I had with a friend of mine, Lenny Cooper, who is a longtime comic reader and collector, and many listeners may know him as C-Towner 1 on several comic boards on the comic forums, and he's also very well-known and active in the Cerebus community. Kicking around Top Cow with Lenny, and this is what he replied. These are his words. Seems I've read a little Top Cow stuff lately. I read the first issue of Artifacts, which I think had a recap of the major Top Cow players and the Witchblade Darkness stuff. Plus, I read a first issue reprint of the first Darkness, I think, or the first Witchblade, or something like that. It wasn't bad, but I'm not sure it's really my cup of tea. Reminds me a little of the early Image comics with the ridiculously big-chested women with no waists and very splashy-type layouts. But I'm committed to reading those two trade paperbacks eventually, so I will be giving it another chance.
I guess my first question would be actually in regards to that email, and you might be able to answer this without Lenny. Was it the Darkness or Witchblade or Artifacts number one that reminded him of early Image?
And in some conversation, I guess I don't know specifically the answer, but based on our conversation, I'm believing it's that Witchblade trade that started with Witchblade 80.
Oh.
And wrapped up the whole Jake presence in the Witchblade story for a while, at least.
Okay. I was thinking if it was going to be the Darkness number one or the Witchblade number one that reminded him of early Image, that would be like George Washington reminding someone of a founding father.
Yeah, right.
Because it kind of was.
Michael Turner art.
I mean, it was four years later, but I mean, it was still kind of in that, you know, early Image time frame, I'd say, kind of before. I want to say it was maybe around, you know, 2000 where it seemed like Image, you know, the 90s bubble had kind of burst and Image was kind of working on finding a foothold again. Jim Lee had sold Wildstorm to DC, and it was kind of, I guess, a reimagining of Top Cow that they had to do of themselves to kind of enter in the 21st century.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. It took me a long time to even try Witchblade or Top Cow books. And some of that is just because of that stigma. Now, I'm not a prude, and I'm not here to say that I don't like looking at, you know, beautiful art and beautiful people drawn in beautiful art. But the art that I had seen prior to Witchblade 80, and maybe even a little bit afterward, you did see the poses where a woman, you'd see her full backside and you'd see her full frontal chest. You know, it's twisting kind of unrealistically for a human body, but most of that stuff is on covers and posters and things, and you know, there is an interest in some of that and a market for some of that. Now, in a retail perspective, I don't know what your view of that type of art would be.
You know, at this point, there's so many covers not being done by interior artists. A lot of the Marvel covers, especially back in the days when Bill Gemmis was around, you know, I mean, they had to be such a multi-purpose piece of artwork that they weren't indicative, oftentimes, of the story inside anyways. So I don't think going, oh, Top Cow's covers are all half-naked chicks turning ways the body can't turn. It's like, well, you get that everywhere. It's not a Top Cow thing, for one, and not all Top Cow covers are like that. So,
and I think that's true. So you get to the question of what is reality versus reputation. And I know that they've been working to move past that stigma. I do have a couple of quotes from Top Cow publisher Philip Sablik. One of them is from Comic Book Resources on June 12, 2008, where he talks about when Ron Mars was brought on to Witchblade, Ron had a couple of requests, and first was that he did not just want to write a book that was an excuse for the main character's clothes to come off. And that's something that editor Renee Gerlings carried on, and now Rob Levin is carrying that on today, as of June 2008. We try to give him good suggestions when appropriate, but otherwise we just stand out of his way and let him do his thing, talking about what Ron's done. And I do think that Ron has had a particular impact on Witchblade and how she interacts, how she fights, how she is chronicled in the Witchblade books.
How the Witchblade is manifested.
And then another quote from Philip was from more than a year later, and this was on Newsrama. And he says, "I don't believe that sexy art and intelligent stories are mutually exclusive. My favorite example in our library is Paul Dini and Kenneth Rocafort's Madame Mirage, which showcases both a fantastic story and beautiful sexy art."
I cannot disagree with that.
Yeah, and it is. That it is, too. She's rather chesty, Madame Mirage. But
even that kind of plays into the story, though.
And that's what surprised me about it, because I picked it up from when it first came out. I picked it up, and the first issue or so was one of those that you kind of hide in the stack because, it, you know, hey, if my wife sees it, it's okay, but it doesn't need to be hanging out there at the top of the pile.
I'm not going to point out to her that I'm reading it.
Yeah, pretty much. Until I read a couple issues, and the story was more important, or at least as important as some of the some of the costuming and art. I think that you can also apply that to Ron Mars's Witchblade, where you've got some, maybe you've got some provocative pictures and some panels here and there, but overall, it's germane to the story, it makes sense, and there's a reason to be there. Yeah. Other feedback we had was from Russ Hagen. Oh, did I do it again? No, that's right. Okay. Other feedback...
Well, I don't think Russ ever told us how
yeah,
it actually...
Yeah, he did.
Oh,
like,
he did?
It's like Ray Gun is what he said. So,
oh,
so you're
awesome.
Right.
Awesome. We should just call him Russ Ray Gun then.
Russ Ray Gun. Other feedback we had was from Russ Hagen, who wrote, as regards Top Cow, his first Top Cow comic was the issue 3 of the current Darkness run before they numbered it. That's early 2008, and then he got into Witchblade with 116 when Stefan Sejic started on art. And Sarah was wearing the full armor, so by this point the cheesecake had been toned down a hell of a lot. And I think that's a really good point to current Witchblade versus the Michael Turner Witchblade, is that when the Witchblade is enacted, Sarah's pretty well covered.
Yeah. To help defend her from attacks and stuff.
Which makes sense. You know, why wouldn't you want to armor? Because if you look at it, like, a good example, if you've got any in the back issue, I had a digital copy downloaded from Drive-Thru Comics of Witchblade 5 with art by Michael Turner. And basically, there's a splash page on there when the Witchblade is active on her, and it's a couple of fingers that cover a nipple, basically, and a thong under there on the other side. It doesn't make practical warfare sense, I guess, to be that uncovered. Yeah.
But, you know, it has all those crazy viney-type appendages, for lack of a better... Like, thorned viney appendages. So, you know, I mean, it could deflect stuff that's flying at her, so...
Yeah, potentially so, especially since it's animated in itself.
In all fairness, I'm totally just playing devil's advocate here.
So you're saying that...
I'm totally okay with her being armored up.
That her skin lures the danger in, and then the armor...
Yeah, the Witchblade takes care of it, yeah. It's like a... It's like an... I don't know, an active... Yeah, you know, they're... Yeah, I got nothing.
Another good point I think Russ makes is when he looks at older trades, he sees why there's this image of Top Cow... But as a counterpoint, it's not as if mainstream titles like X-Men have never had or have cheesecake artwork. And I think you can flip through just even Marvel's preview or Marvel previews and see some examples of that.
I mean, how many times, you know, have we seen Wolverine with his costume torn up and you see his bare chest? Probably quite a few. And really, I don't know when this realization came to me. It might have been after you mentioned you wanted to talk about this, and well, obviously we talk about it all the time, but you know, I mean, record something for it. I think part of the reason it always seems cheesecakey is because for quite a while, Witchblade has been Top Cow's flagship book. If their flagship book was Darkness, I don't think it would have that image. Because people be like, oh, it's just another dude in skin-tight, armory, spandex-looking stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if Spider-Woman and Ms. Marvel... Marvel characters I can't think of right now. Yeah, She-Hulk. You know, I mean, if it was all of them and they were the big flagship books for Marvel, I think you could make an argument that, oh, it's all cheesecakey. Well, no, it's just their ratio of... books featuring women is drastically different. Their flagship book is arguably Amazing Spider-Man, Uncanny X-Men, and Avengers, I guess flagship books. And some people might say, oh, well, women have been in X-Men and Avengers, and those have also been the characters people have complained about the cheesecakiness of. So I think if, you know, it was the ratio was reversed, the same complaints could be made.
Yeah, and I think you have a point with that, because regardless of who they are, there are few realistic body styles being drawn in comics, in superhero comics anyway, and fantasy comics anyway, male or female. The thing I'm thinking of is if I picked up previews 5 years ago, and I use 5 years ago as an example because I didn't read any Top Cow titles 5 years ago, I think the only image title I might have picked up was Fell.
Fell.
So
I hear there's work being done on a new fell.
Have you? I haven't heard anything since.
I thought
they were going to make a movie out of it.
I don't remember where I read it, but I think we might have. Maybe someone tweeted that Warnell has tweeted that Temple Smith is working on a new issue.
That'd be cool. He can't have enough $1.99 comics, I think, but we'll
Heck
see
no.
what goes. But in any case, I wasn't buying Top Cow, so they were off my radar for the most part. But if I flip through previews, you'd get a splash page of maybe the B or C cover art for Witchblade, the flagship title, which would be definitely adolescent poster material. And then you'd flip a few pages, and you've got a big splash page of Lady Death. And then you flip a few more pages, and you've got Lincer's Dawn. And so it all kind of blended into, okay, so it's categorized with that stuff because I have a similar pose as a splash solicitation for Witchblade as I have for Lady Death and for Dawn. So, you kind of lump it together. And that's really unfair, but it kind of is what it was. Yeah. Another point he has, and this is where I'll depart a little bit from what Russ says, but I think it's a valid point, and I see where he's coming from. He says, saying that, I think the worst thing Top Cow has done lately, I should back up a little bit. He does say that Top Cow has more varied titles and art styles, and that's a big deal. Books like Echoes, Berserker, Tracker are a world away from early Witchblade. He makes a great point there. You can't just think that there's a house style. I started off with the show, and I was talking with Josh saying, let's talk about the Top Cow house style. But it's really clear, if you look through the titles, there is no house style. Especially if you pick up something like Echoes and Artifacts on the same week, you're going to get drastically different stuff. But his last point, he says, saying that, I think the worst thing Top Cow has done lately to try to shake this view was to have 5 pages of lesbian porn in Angelus 5. And I was reading that and thinking, why? Now, I have a very strong reaction to that, but what's your reaction?
You know, I don't know if I should feel bad that I don't have a really emotional response to it. Honestly, it's been a while since I've read it, and in the moment, I want to say maybe not shock and awe in the sense of, oh, I can't believe they did this, and not so much, oh, yeah, this is totally, turning me on in a creepy way. I think in the context, it kind of worked in their building relationship, and in the title, they dealt with their relationship and not just, oh, it's two girls making out. You know what I mean? They dealt with Danny's dad and how he felt about it. So it wasn't just, maybe you could have done a one page or a one panel. I can't really say.
My thought is pretty similar to yours. And again, I see Russ's point. I think he makes a good one as far as if you're trying to get away from being labeled that way, what are you going here for? I think that the artwork is terrific from Stefan Sejic. The scene of Danny and Finch coming together was something that has been building up since stories in Witchblade when she was first introduced. And too often in comics, you get a case of you're watching them, and all of a sudden they're in love, and you just don't buy it. So this, I think, really moved the story forward to how Danny could really care as much about her and how they could really have that. It almost consummated their relationship to a degree that she would react and do anything to save her life, where before that happened, I don't know if it would be as easy to buy. The other thing is, I think that the art that was used to portray the sex scene, basically, was definitely provocative. It was not graphic, but it also didn't hide anything. But I don't think it was inappropriate. And these are not comics for kids. And I do buy comics for kids, and I enjoy them, and I have fun when I feel like feeling like a kid. That's great. But that's not why I read Top Cow comics. I want to be challenged. I want to be provoked. I want to be interested. And frankly, I'm also the guy, and you've alluded to him a little more, I in life I would rather see a lot more love than war. So, action scenes and cool twists on how fights go are really good. But you know, the whole thing that motivates most countries and people to fight each other is about sex anyway. So to try and pretend it doesn't happen doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So I'm more than comfortable with sex in my books. And I think that this is showing a loving exchange in relationship as opposed to some of the early Witchblade issues. And here I'm cracking it again, but where you would have pictures of just Sarah lying naked in bed sleeping for no other reason but a chance to draw her, you know, her curve, her thigh, because she's naked in bed sleeping.
Yeah, good. A good emotional, visceral, sometimes even primal response is a good thing, I think.
So most of these books, we really recommend that you don't share them with your kids unless your kids are, you know, unless your kid's like a teenager and then you want to leave them around so they can find them a little bit, because we all need a little outlet as we grow up. But I'm not against sex in the books as long as it's not, you know, as long as it's not like Maxim where they're just throwing it in there for the sake of being in there. If it's part of the story, if it moves the story, if these are adults and adult relationships, these things happen and I'm all for it. And I know that I've heard Top Cow writers and editors and Philip himself say that this is part of it and they like to be sexy. It, you know, they don't need to be it for the sake of being there, but I think it drives the story and it makes the whole Top Cow product better.
Yeah. I definitely don't think that scene in particular was there just, you know, oh, we're just going to put it here to put it here. Why Top Cow? Passion. Emotions. Primal responses to stuff. I kind of believe it more like when Sarah gets frustrated and can't do anything in Witchblade than, say, in the X-Men where Cyclops is crying about something again. Oh, I just cried about this 2 weeks ago, but oh, I'm going to complain and cry about this again. And it's like, really? Get over it or do something about it. It doesn't feel that way in Top Cow books. It seems like, you know, people have issues, they lash out. But it seems more believable.
I agree. And heroes have fallibilities. Villains aren't totally without some nugget of merit in some places. And the one thing I think is lost, and we've been talking a lot through here about primarily Witchblade and Witchblade-related titles, but Top Cow is a whole lot more than that. And I think that's the second stigma that people need to be aware of. If you're listening to this podcast, you're already aware of it, I'm hoping.
Before we jump there, though, I actually had thought of one other thing about the whole misconception of Top Cow and even Image back in the day. Witchblade wasn't Top Cow's first book. I mean, look at Cyberforce. Mm-hmm. There were a decent number of guys on that team, and, you know, it focused just as much on men as women, and not every cover was, oh, hey, look, here's Velocity sleeping in bed. So,
yeah.
Just another example of, you know, you can't even, going back, you can't even just say, oh, that's all they were about back then. Well, they weren't. And, I mean, there's plenty of other books that Top Cow did that, even Top Cow Universe stuff, as far as I know, that wasn't really, you know, just here's a woman half naked on a cover.
Yeah, they really don't deserve that, and so we're basically not going to acknowledge it anymore.
Yeah.
Because it just isn't true. There's a lot to like about Top Cow, and, you know, it really has evolved and grown from its earliest days. The books coming out now are... Well,
I might acknowledge it, if only to smack people figuratively in the face and tell them not to do that.
There are
Remember
a lot
when
of
I mentioned that emotional primal response? There you go.
So how are you finding Top Cow titles selling?
Sadly, not as well as they should. It's not cool, actually, it saddens me. Though I have found, like, for example, Darkness does not sell well at all. The numbers here aren't as good because being as new of a store as we are, there's not a good sampling. I have done my share to try and boost some of those sales, but at our other store where, you know, I mean, Darkness was selling a fifth of what Witchblade was.
Wow.
But here, you know, I mean, the new store, it's a little more intimate, and I think sometimes it's a little easier to recommend stuff to people just because it's not the same people usually and not as overwhelming in size as the other store. I moved 10 copies of the $5 Witchblade trade in 10 weeks. And, you know, I had a guy who hadn't read anything in a while, but, you know, picked up first two volumes of Darkness Accursed.
Yeah.
And then came in a week later and picked up the other two. And I'm like,
yeah, that's been a fun.
I'm gonna have to order some more Darkness for this guy to start buying. That's gonna have to be older stuff because he's blown through all the Phil Hester stuff already.
Yeah, and then Echoes now is a hot book. They have been getting a lot of attention and selling pretty well. Is that selling pretty well out of your stores?
Couple issues of Echoes number one in a couple days.
Yeah.
So sold through so quick that I ordered second printings, but I also ordered the Top Cow first look because, really, it's the same price, it's the same material, and technically it's the first printing of Echoes number one, and for an extra $2, you get five more Top Cow comics.
That's hard to beat.
Yeah, how can you say a publisher doesn't get behind their stuff and not even their, for lack of a better term, non-TNA stuff, you know?
I do give Top Cow a lot of credit for doing everything they can to be accessible to a new reader. The $4.99 trades, I think, is a great idea. It's a low-risk proposition for somebody to try something out, and you hope that you can get there. It's how I got into it. The $4.99 trades piqued my interest, and although that Witchblade 1 trade that started with Witchblade 80, that trade in itself didn't get me to want to go out and get more. After I read 1 and 2, after 2, I just was hungry for some more, and then I ended up reading, you know, more than one a week, so it was fun getting through those.
It was Chad's coloring on those four pages, I bet.
It probably was 88 that picked me up.
Oh, yeah, that was issue 88, by the way. When people are also like, oh, this is the Top Cow stuff. There was this miniseries, became a movie called the miniseries was called Wanted 2, but a lot of people, when they talk about Top Cow, don't seem to take into account stuff like Wanted, Down by Warren Ellis. You know what I mean? There's been a lot of that stuff, too, that they've done. Even Ron Mars' Dragon Prince, which is probably night and day compared to, well, I shouldn't say probably, I've read it. It's night and day with Witchblade, which is, you know, same publisher, same writer, drastically different book.
So you can feed a lot of needs looking at the Top Cow catalog. And we're big fans. And the more I read and the more I learn, not everything is up my alley. I read Echoes number one, and I'm not sure I really want to keep going. It's really well written, and the art is interesting and good. The story is ultra creepy, and I'm just not sure if I really want to go there. But that's all right, because I'm a big supporter of it existing in the Top Cow universe, because I know there are people who really groove on that story. And there's something for everyone, I think. Any adult wanting to read comics is going to be much more satisfied with what Top Cow's putting out than even what a lot of the big two are putting out.
One thing I have noticed, though, is that when it comes to hand-selling a trade of a Top Cow book compared to a single issue, it seems like sometimes it's easier to sell the trades. Because not even the $4.99 price point trades. I mean, you look at the Artifacts trade. That was
$9.99.
That had four, basically $4 comics in it, plus a free comic.
Yeah.
I mean,
and their trades are really good. The extras are fun. They print every cover there is, and a lot of backstory. And I like what Brian Rountree has been doing in a lot of the Top Cow books with his write-ups in the back. I think that it helps bring people up to speed if they're not, and it helps reinforce your knowledge if you do know it. So they're putting out really quality stuff, so I hope you keep picking them up. And if you don't pick up Top Cow books, or maybe you just read Artifacts or Witchblade, expand out a little bit and check it out. We really think that you won't be disappointed.
Yeah, there's all the pilot season stuff. Generally, I mean, 2009 was a whole bunch of different Kirkman stuff. I didn't like all of it.
It's a great idea to put a bunch of titles out there and see what sells, see what sticks. And it's a great time to be a fan of Top Cow right now. This is the golden age of Top Cow right now.
Ooh, or is it a renaissance?
It could be. It's the golden renaissance of Top Cow.
The golden renaissance of Top Cow. You guys can use that in ads and stuff. We won't.
Yep. Free and ask clear. For anything. Whatever you want. No, just keep making good books.
Though, when you mentioned Echoes being in the Top Cow universe, I just so we don't get any miscommunications anywhere or anything, I think what you meant was the Top Cow catalog.
I meant being published by Top Cow. Yeah, thanks.
Who knows when Western Darkness might show up in a flashback in Echoes. And you never
Anything's
know.
Possible in comics. So with that in mind, we've got, I think, our lineup for the next couple of shows. Next week, we're going to take a look at Artifacts number 5, which has now been out for a few weeks. So,
so you've had time to read it.
Right. We're hoping that you can get there. And some cool things go down there, move the story forward. And we have Will Sportasio come in on the artwork, and we've got a lot to talk about with that one. And after that, we're going to dive into the Top Cow First Look trade that we had mentioned earlier. So pick it up. It's $4.99, and they're available.
Yep.
If your store doesn't have them, they can get them in probably pretty quick.
It might take a couple weeks. Diamond's got goofy time frames for stuff, so unless you spend the extra money to have something direct shipped, not just with your regular shipment and... But,
well, talk to your store owner or manager and have them get it in. If they've sold out of it, have them get in another Top Cow First Look because they exist. And we're going to do that in 2 weeks. So it gives you the 2 weeks. If you order it today, it'll give you the 2 weeks to get it so you can read it and chat along with us, we hope. Send any feedback on either Artifacts 5 or Top Cow First Look to us at dtcpodcast@gmail.com. Leave your name, and you'll all automatically be entered in the February contest.
And, I've actually eaten one of these apple fritters now. They're pretty good.
Not too bad.
You know, they're, unlike the ones that I've gotten down in Oklahoma, they aren't as flat and crispy on the outside.
Yeah.
Since they're, you know, they're almost like goofy, odd-shaped. Well, they're like polo balls that have been smacked around for an entire game.
Yeah.
And, but even unlike, say, the PDQ ones, they still, they don't just have, almost, it's not like a lifeless, cakey, quite sure what it is. It's still this ball of tasty apple fritterness.
And I was really impressed by the chunk. You got, on one of them, I had a big slice of an apple in there. It's not just, it's definitely not apple pie filling that they're using in these. So these are some fresh cut apples, and it's a really... It's really soft and airy, sweet on the inside, and you still have that crisp crunch, but it doesn't like hold the grease like some of the gas stations.
Where is Lane's Bakery again?
Lane's Bakery is on Park Street in Madison.
Okay. All right.
So Park and Drake, I believe it is. And we'll have links, as always, we'll have links to information about our donuts on the show notes. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again.
Good journey.